completely from the what we get see from the observations. But one of the questions which we were trying to pose yesterday was that why do we all need this cosmological constant now? We are not interested in the static universe, which the way Einstein was interested. So let us see what observations compel us. But before we go there, I want to go back to something which you may have learned in the first week, and that has to do with the luminosity distance. So let us first understand that. Let us just review it a little bit, and then we'll understand the decays. So the luminosity distance is essentially defined as So we know the luminosity distance if there is a some galaxy at coordinate r and redshift c is given by this, and this can be written as 1 plus z . So you guys have done this, right, in the first week. What is the luminosity distance? Okay, good. And now what I want to do is I want to write this Hubble as a, in terms of the, the summary terms of the density parameters. And the reason I want to do that is that suppose if I have a measurement of the luminosity distance, then I will be able to constrain the density parameters and hence the model in which I'm interested in. Okay? So to do that, let us recall that this equation, suppose if I have a universe in which I have dust, if I have radiation, if I have lambda, and if I also have curvature, then this equation with the use of the omega, which is defined as rho by rho critical. I hope you guys have seen this, but if not, it's very easy to derive. It can be written as x naught square omega m at z equal to 0, 1 plus z cube plus omega r 0, 1 plus z 4 plus omega lambda plus 1 minus omega naught 1 plus z square. So we know how to derive this, right? All of us, or not, we know, right? So we have this equation, and we just use the definition of omega. What is omega? It's like rho by rho c for any dual matter. And then we use the fact that rho varies as some scale factor, a to the power minus 3 for dust, it will go as 1 plus z to the power q, and then we will, once we use that fact, we'll get an omega m naught, omega r naught, omega lambda, and so on. This is just your first week recap. Okay, so the idea is that suppose if an astronomer tells me what is the luminosity distance, he will ask me what is your Hubble at a given redshift. And we can have our own favorite model of cosmology, and we will say my model has dust, radiation, lambda, and curvature, and this is the Hubble in my theory. And go and constrain this Hubble using your luminosity distance, which you have measured. If your model doesn't have omega k, so this term will be 0, so you will say like I have omega m, omega r, and omega lambda. If your model doesn't have lambda, then you will switch all this. And then using this theory and using this observation, which I'll describe how we do, we can constrain our parameters. Okay? So now I want to do a slightly different exercise. I still want to develop some intuition for the theory here. So let us take a very special case of a universe which has just a small real constant and everything else is 0 in this universe. Okay, it is a flat universe, k equal to 0, and I want omega lambda equal to 1. I want omega r, omega dust equal to 0. And since it is flat and everything else is 0, omega 0 is also 1. Okay, so now I want to plug this here, and I want to find what is the luminosity distance for such a universe, which has just a small constant. So if I do that, then I will get dl equal to think there should be a c here, but we are putting c equal to 1, so it doesn't matter. 1 plus z. And omega lambda is anywhere 1. So the answer for this, if you do the integral, is just z square plus z by h naught. I hope I have not made any mistake, but I think it's the answer. Okay? So now, this is one example. This is, let us say, you have your universe, in which these are the values of your parameters, and the luminosity distance you predict is this. Now he has another universe, and he doesn't like lambda, and he says, for example, that let there be only dust in my universe, and my universe is black. So let us put, he will say that omega r equal to omega lambda is 0. And again, k is 0, so omega r is 1. And he just has omega dust equal to 1 in this. So if we do that exercise, then the answer which he gets for BL is 1 plus z h naught omega m naught half minus 1 by 2 1 plus z square. So you will get a different luminosity distance from what he will get. Okay? So depending on the values of parameters you will put here for your theory, you will get a different luminosity distance. And it's not difficult to see that if you fix your redshift, let us say z equal to 1, you say like I observe some astrophysical object which is luminous at z equal to 1, then this luminosity distance is greater than that luminosity distance if you put the sum of values of omega naught, like 1 or something. So let me give you a plot and you can check it yourself that that is true. So we can plot z versus dl, that is 0. So let me put 2, 4, 6, 8. Well, we never go to such high redshifts, but anyway, it's just a theoretical plot. So 5. So if you have omega lambda equal to 1 universe, which is this universe, which I described earlier, your plot will go like this. This is just I'm not getting this exactly the same curve, but qualitative. Okay? If you have omega matter equal to 1 and omega lambda equal to 0, the plot will go like this. This is omega lambda equal to 0, omega matter equal to 1, this is omega matter equal to 0, omega lambda equal to 1. If you have something in the middle, which is our realistic universe, but still, the plot will go something like this. Let us say omega matter equal to 0.3, omega lambda equal to 0.7. So the significance of this plot is that cosmological constant, the effect of cosmological constant is to increase the luminosity distance. Okay? If you have a universe in which the cosmological constant is 0, you will have some luminosity distance, which will turn out to be this curve. But if you put non-zero cosmological constant and compute the luminosity distance, then your luminosity distance increases. And luminosity distance is what? Its physical interpretation is it's the distance which is apparent to an observer. Because an observer who doesn't know what is a redshift, he just sees something in the sky and he thinks that this is the distance without taking into account the redshift or the expansion of the universe. Okay, so that is the kind of an apparent distance. So what is the effect of this distance? Why this plot is so important? Let us see that. Because once we understand this plot, we understand the supernova observations, what astronomers observe now. Okay, so let us recall, I think Niyesh must have covered this in the first week, but if he has not covered, it doesn't matter. Like I can just tell you the definition of So have you guys studied apparent luminosity? You have studied. Okay, good. So the apparent luminosity of any object L is equal to the absolute luminosity divided by 4 pi dl squared. Okay?
So if you have a universe, so suppose you have dust dominated universe, okay? You see some astrophysical objects at some redshift, z equal to 1. You would have said that this is my luminosity distance, and I know capital L, so I know what is L. Or equivalently, you know capital L from theory. You measure L, small l, and you'll figure out what is dl. Okay? But if you combine this expression with this expression and try to interpret, what you will conclude is that if you have astrophysical objects at z equal to 1, let us say, then those objects in the cosmological constant dominant universe, which has higher dl, will appear fainter because they have smaller apparent luminosity. Do you understand, or shall I repeat the argument?
Since dl is larger in a lambda-dominated universe, the apparent luminosity of the objects will be smaller. And these astrophysical objects will appear fainter than they would have appeared in a dust-dominated universe. That is the main point. Okay? So now what people observe, so like in 1998, there were observations of type 1 is supernova objects. So supernovas are essentially formed from white dwarfs. And the white dwarfs are the stars which are actually have run out of their fuel, and they are just controlled by the electron degeneracy pressure. These accrete matter from nearby stars, and that starts a thermonuclear reaction inside these stars, and then they explode in a very spectacular way. Okay? And we can, since we know the luminosity of these objects, they act like standard candles. The standard candle is an object whose luminosity is theoretically known to us. So these were essentially people observed in 1998, what were called type 1A supernovas. There were two teams. One was Perlmutter et al. Which was a supernova cosmology project. And then there was another team by Rees and his collaborators, which was. So there were two independent measurements of high redshift supernovas in 1998. Okay? And both of these measurements, both of these observations, in fact, saw the same thing, a very similar thing. That when they observe supernovas at redshifts around 1, slightly less than 1, around that, they found that supernovas are actually dimmer than they would have expected from a dust-dominated universe. Okay, so that immediately explains to us that the luminosity distance is actually underestimated in a dust-dominated universe. It should have been higher. The only way to put it higher, if this expression, the Friedman equation were true, was if omega lambda is present. And they found out that the naive idea is that what they found was this number is the best way. Omega m equal to 0.3 and omega lambda equal to 0.7. And since omega lambda is non-zero, that forces us to bring back lambda in the theory. Okay? That is the main idea. So are there any questions here? Then, yeah. Yeah, so after that we have observed more supernova and we have added to the data, and the conclusion has only become more robust. There have been no observations after that which have ruled out which was a proof. So they were independent measurements of different supernovas, around 100 in number, which is not a very large number, but still significant number. And after that more data has been added of the same order. And the current model without any whistles and bells, which works, is this. That omega is 0.3, omega lambda is 0.7. So this tells us, first of all, that the density of the cosmological constant, which we were computing yesterday, is actually very close to the critical density, because it is 0.7. And then we are living in a universe where the cosmological constant is actually dominant over the matter density today. Okay? So this tells us a simple way to explain why supernova high redshifts appear fainter, just because the luminosity distance is underestimated
So now let us compute what was actually the redshift at which the universe made this transition. So we know that universe was not accelerating much in past. It started accelerating fairly recently because these are not very far away objects. Okay? So we want to compute what is that value of z at which the universe shifted to cosmological constant dominations. So to do that, let us recall the deceleration parameter. The deceleration parameter is q, which we all know, is minus a double dot by ax squared. Okay? And now what I'm going to do is to take a k equal to 0 universe for simplicity, and then one can use the Friedman equation which I wrote earlier in terms of omegas, and then my claim is that, well, this is a small exercise, but you can check it, that q of t will be omega r of t plus half omega m of t minus omega lambda. You just have to plug in the x here which we wrote, and then you have to plug in the Reichold equation. Okay? Now we also know that in fairly recent times, when the universe became dust dominated, the radiation energy density is very small compared to omega. Even if we put this number, it's 10 to the power minus 4 of the dust. So we can neglect this as the first approximation. This will not give us any big error. And if you look at this, then this can be written as omega m, that's omega m naught by 2aq, because it goes as 1 over aq minus omega lambda. And this is essentially half omega m naught 1 plus z cube minus omega lambda. Okay. So, So when did this transition happen? When this transition would have happened, we would have shifted from the strong energy condition would have shifted from the deceleration to the acceleration, right? So that means a double dot has to be equal to zero. The universe went from deceleration phase to acceleration phase. The q has to be zero. We can put this equal to zero and solve for z. So if we do that, then we get 1 plus z q is 2 omega lambda by omega m zero. And if we plug in the number, that omega m naught is 0.3 and omega lambda, which is a constant, is 0.7, then we get this is 1, then this gives that 1 plus z is 1.67. So that means z is 0.67. So this is a very recent redshift at which the universe has started accelerating. Okay? So the observations actually are telling us that somewhere very recent in the history, the cosmological constant starts dominating. So this adds to the cosmological constant further. So this is sometimes called the cosmological coincidence problem. So not only that lambda is extremely small, there is an orders of magnitude difference between the observed value and what we see from the quantum field theory, assuming that there is a cutoff at Planck scale and so on. The other problem is that why cosmological constant starts dominating now, very recently in the history of the universe. Okay? So this essentially ends the cosmological constant part. So let us see, like, if you have any questions here. Okay, let us do slightly more about the cosmological constant in a different way. So these days what happens is, like recently, there has been a lot of work to construct models in cosmology without putting cosmological constant, but playing with the potential, with some real scalar field and some potential. And this is the idea which is very similar to inflation, and this is called quintessence. So this is actually a hot topic of dark energy now, these days, and dark energy research to understand what is the cosmological constant. And the idea behind that is that since we don't understand why, how to explain such a huge fine-tuning of the cosmological constant, maybe particle physics can provide us some potential with a, some field such that its parameters automatically lead to the value of cosmological constant, which we observe. Okay, that is the idea. So we, this idea is called quintessence, and it has many different variants, but I will just give you the brief overview of this. So let us recall that we studied that W, which is P by rho, for a massive scalar field is phi dot square minus 2v, phi dot square plus 2v. And if the potential dominates, so if we have phi dot square much, much smaller than v, then W, is close to minus 1 and behaves like a cosmological constant. So our aim is to construct a model like we did in inflation, but we did it in early times, right, for slow roll conditions and so on. And we wanted an exponential expansion to explain the number of e-foldings. Now our task is different. Our task is we want to explain, we want a potential which mimics cosmological constant at late times, but it should have additional feature. The additional feature is that this field phi, which we call quintessence, should somehow know when to switch over the energy density of radiation and dust. Okay, so in a way, it should track what is happening in the universe. It should remain subdominant, like let us say it should remain stealth in some way. It should remain hidden, but it should know what is happening in the universe, how energy density and radiation are behaving. And then at an appropriate time, around z equal to 1, it should switch its role, become dominant, and tell us about why the universe expands, accelerated expansion. Okay, so we want something. So the basic idea is the following. This is one of the ideas, that if you plot z plus 1 versus rho, then the if you plot radiation, radiation goes like this, let us say. Okay. If you plot dust, then dust goes like this in the universe. So earlier, at earlier redshifts, radiation is dominant. Somewhere we reach the matter radiation equality, and after that, dust starts becoming dominant. We need a component, we need a field such that which remains subdominant, which is something like a subdominant component. Let me draw with a straight line. Subdominant component which knows when things are going to change, and then suddenly it becomes like this. So that it remains hidden, it remains subdominant for most of the history of the universe, but at late times, when we approach z equal to 1, and after that, it becomes a dominant component of the universe. We want to construct such a field. We want to construct such a potential. Okay? So if such a potential has to be constructed, the first requirement is that we have to understand what it should satisfy. The first condition it should satisfy is that it should be able to go in the same way, similar way, as radiation and dust evolve. Okay, so it should have a power law. The universe should have a power law expansion in that, because dust and radiation give us the power law. Like A goes as T to the power 2 by 3, 1 plus W. So we want something like that. So we require that A goes as some T to the power P. And it turns out that if you want A double dot greater than 0, then you require P greater than 1. Okay? And now you can actually construct such a potential by looking at the Friedmann equation. So if you play around with the Friedmann equations, so this is just an example that you can write down the Friedmann equation. Using Friedmann equation, you can write V as this quantity. But just take it at the moment like this. You can solve it using h dot and h square. Since we don't have much time left, I'm not going to give you the complete derivation. But this is how potential can be related. And then using h dot equal to minus 4 pi g phi dot square, and then using Friedmann equations, you can, this just follows from him. And taking phi dot square greater than 0, we get this as minus h dot by 4 5G. Maybe there is a modulus here. Where h dot is negative. Okay? So that this fraction is positive and the square root is well defined. So using these things, one of the potentials which satisfies such a requirement, and it is one of the early quintessence potentials, can be written in this form. So it is V equal to V naught exponential of minus 16 pi p phi by M Planck. So what we have done here is we have assumed that scale factor should go this way. And then we have reconstructed by backward engineering a potential which will lead to this behavior. So that's a good potential for quintessence the way we want. Okay. So suppose particle physics now gives us this potential, then we are done. Then we can explain why the universe is accelerating in the present epoch. Okay. We still have to put in the parameters like V naught and so on, but this is like what this will be our wish list from the standard model. Another potential which will work is given by this phi to the power alpha. So now you can ask, like, what happened to the fine-tuning problem? Like, the cosmological constant faced a huge fine-tuning problem. Do these potentials face a huge fine-tuning problem? The answer is yes. It still doesn't resolve the dark energy problem. Because you have to remember, like, you have to really match when this transition happened. Not only this has to track, this also has to turn over and become a dominant component later in time. So in order to do that, you have to fix V naught and alpha in a very fine-tuned way. Okay, so it doesn't resolve the fine-tuning issue. It alleviates in some models, but it's certainly not a resolution. Okay, so why don't you ask questions?
Partial physics then takes these potentials of
these. Absolutely, they are insane. Like, there's no doubt. That is why the dark energy problem is not solved. So, but this is just the idea is to, you see, but the point is that unless we will do this exercise, we will not even figure out what do we want from the particle physics, right? So, we will figure out these potentials, and then it turns out that particle physics will have a lot of difficult time to give these potentials, so these things are not going to work. So, this is certainly an open problem. Okay.
So, the potential that you wrote down the first line. It can communicate only with the contents of the universe through the Hubble constant.
Hubble parameter, yes.
Okay.
So this is a minimally coupled field.
Yeah. Okay. So it can't couple directly to the matter or the radiation. It just couples to the Hubble constant.
Yeah. Okay. That is the way it reacts to everything. So it remains subdominant. It doesn't interact with anything. And then later on, it just switches. This is just like it's kind of cheating in a way, right? It's honest because like the cosmological constant by itself explains that omega lambda should be this much and omega matter should be 0.3. Now we want to cook up a potential. We don't like lambda. Some people may say like lambda is too boring. And let us try to construct a potential because we can always motivate it comes from some fundamental theory. And then let us see what happens. So that is the idea.
So, yeah. So why is it difficult for things to cook up?
Because particle physics, first of all, doesn't even give us a field, fine, right? So this is a real scalar field, and we don't have any real scalar field. Like, you can try to play with Higgs, but it will not give us a potential like this.
I mean,
we need the potential. Not only we need the right potential, we need the right energy scale. So far, I don't think there is any. Well, there are models which come, which people have tried to propose from string cosmology, but they're very tentative right now.
But I don't mean like serious, like actual particle models, but like, so it seems like a field like this would only, like if you put a scalar field in a box, then H is related to like the rate of change of the size of the box. Is that correct?
H is the Hubble expansion anyway.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so all you need is a field food. With a potential, like, it depends on the size of the box and so on.
But it should depend in a very particular way.
Right.
How will you construct that?
Yeah.
Like, that will be putting things by hand, right? Yeah.
Yes, is there any way to make this potentially be the same from the same form as the entropy application of the module?
That's a very good question. So let me give you one answer for that. So it could have happened. So I think like some people have worked on this idea. It could have happened that instead of the chaotic potential which was like this, okay? It is not like this. Well, it is like this, but the minimum is not at zero. The minimum is somewhere here. Okay? So when the field will reheat and lead to the universe, what it will lead is a small plus one little constant, lambda here. Because of this minimum, of this V naught. And you can try to argue, or you can try to construct this potential in such a way that this V naught or this lambda or this constant potential starts dominating later on. So people have played with this. But again it requires a lot of fine tuning. Okay, I think like let us go to the last topic. It is again a small overview because we don't have much time left. So as you see, like we haven't solved, like I so we discussed about various problems, we haven't really solved any of them in a fundamental way. So that is why cosmology is a very hot and a very open field. But these problems are also quite hard in some ways. Okay, so let us let me go to some idea. Like this is just like advertisement of some of the things which you can, which are like the forefront of research these days. So you guys must have heard about string landscape, right? In the colloquiums and so on. So you can think like, instead of having this chaotic inflationary scenario or this new inflation or old inflation, why don't we have, since we have so many fields which come from string theory, why don't any of those fields try to give us some inflation, right? We have a huge landscape of the fields which, let us say it goes like this. But it's not a good plot. Let us say something like this. It is completely arbitrary. Like anything is possible in this landscape. So we can have a field, which is, let us say, it rolled from here, then it tunneled here, somewhere here, and then it tunnels here, and then it slow rolls here, and maybe it gives us inflation. Okay, a combination of the things which we have already learned. So one idea, which is quite popular, again, like it was very popular in the mid-90s, is to have a potential which looks very similar to this potential, which is essentially of this form. Which looks like a small hill, a metastable state, like this, and then a very flat potential after that. Okay, so one can think that perhaps this potential is part of this landscape scenario. It describes some small hill and valleys. And then if a field is trapped here, let us try to see whether it gives us enough inflation and what are the observable consequences of that. So as we discussed in the old inflationary scenario, suppose the field is stuck here for a long time, then it's going to behave as W equal to minus 1. Okay? It is going to, the universe is going to go into de-Sitter phase. And then it is possible that this field, if this potential, this small bump is high enough, so this is in the metastable state, or the false vacuum. And then this field can tunnel here. Okay? And then it can slow roll, if this slope is good enough for us. So one of such models was proposed by, which is called BGT model in some books, by Butcher, Goldhaber, and Turok. In 1995, and it was also by, at the same time, by Sasaki, Tanaka, and Yamamoto, I think at around the very same time, 94, 96, something like that, in these periods. So these guys proposed a model which looked very similar. And there are very nice features about these models, some of them, which we have discussed as deficiency of the ordinary inflationary scenario. The first feature of this model was
as, for example, as you have done in the second tutorial, that if you have chaotic inflation long enough, then omega naught goes to 1 in the modern after the inflation, right? This model had omega naught less than 1. So you can observationally constrain this, and you can look at the cosmological perturbations, and this is falsifiable, okay? And actually, that is why this model eventually became unpopular, because omega naught came out to be very close to 1. But these models are becoming again popular because this mechanism looks very similar to what might happen in string landscape. Okay, so they are again, people have again started working in it. The second important thing of this model was that there was no physical singularity. I'll explain it why it happens. But if you look at the universe, which is inflating here, and if you look backwards at t equal to 0, the singularity was a coordinate singularity. Coordinate singularity means that you can choose appropriate coordinates so that you can remove that singularity. It's just an artifact. It's just apparent. None of the space-time curvatures diverge there. So these were the two beautiful things about this model. So let me explain it a little more. So as I said here, like we can say that there is a field which is trapped here. So there is a first phase of inflation, which occurs because this field is trapped in a false vacuum. So this field, so if even if you started with very inhomogeneous conditions on this landscape, if this field is trapped in this vacuum, the universe is going to behave de Sitter. It is going to exponentially expand, and then it is going to homogenize all the inhomogeneities. So we get a perfect de Sitter state in this phase. So this is the first inflation which happens. Okay. Then once these conditions are set, then there is a process which is quantum tunneling, but in detail it was worked out by Coleman and DeLucia in early 80s. Who showed that after some time, with some finite probability, a bubble of space-time emerges from the quantum tunneling. And the feature of this bubble is that the universe inside this bubble is an open universe. Okay? It's k equal to minus 1. And it comes with the initial conditions are that A dot is actually 1, and we have A equal to 0. And we also have phi dot equal to 0. And since we have omega minus 1, from this we know from the first week, as k by A square x square, which is equal to k by A dot square, we get that omega minus 1 is k, because it's an open universe inside, this is minus 1, so that means omega is 0. Okay, let me explain it a bit more. So we started from here. Inflation occurred here. Omega went to 1 when the field was stuck here. Then this Coleman-DeLucia quantum tunneling happens, and the bubble which emerges here is not with omega equal to 1. It is with omega equal to 0. So omega clock is reset to 0. Okay, by this quantum tunneling mechanism. This all can be rigorously shown, that this omega is 0. Now omega is 0 here, and then a slow roll happens on this potential. So now we know, again from the second tutorial, like if you start from omega very different from 1, and if there is enough inflation, you can drive that omega close to 1. So now you can set the parameter such that you have omega naught today, which is less than 1. Okay? Does everyone get the idea, or shall I explain again? So let me explain again. So we want to study this in the landscape kind of motivation. This is the potential which looks like, okay, eventually. The field has two phases of inflation. The first phase of inflation is very similar to the old inflation which Guth introduced, that the field is trapped in a false vacuum. It happens here. When the field is trapped here, it homogenizes the universe, the universe becomes very de Sitter. When it becomes very de Sitter, the conditions which allow for this quantum tunneling done by these guys, Coleman and DeLucia, occurs. But before that quantum tunneling, omega has gone to 1 already, okay, because of the inflation, the de Sitter inflation. Okay. Now the quantum tunneling happens in such a way that what we produce here is an open universe inside a bubble with these initial conditions. This is what Coleman-DeLucia tunneling tells us. If these initial conditions are true, and if the open, it is an open universe inside, then it means that omega is actually 0 inside the bubble. So all the hard work of the inflation done here to put omega equal to 1 disappears. One starts afresh with a universe which actually has omega equal to 0 inside the bubble. Now, we'll be all worried that omega is 0, but we are not living in the universe with omega equal to 0. So then there is a second phase of inflation, which is the slow roll inflation, because this potential is very flat, which drives this omega very close to 1, but not 1 again. So if you choose sufficient number of E foldings here, you can always finish below 1. Okay? So that is the main idea. And actually, like, the number of E foldings, so the relation between phi, so as we worked out, you remember, like, what should be the phi initial such that we get 60 foldings, right? So you can do the same exercise here. What should be the value of phi here so that you get number of E foldings and omega? So you got a relation between number of E foldings and phi initial, but you also have a relation between number of E foldings and omega, which was your second tutorial. You can combine both of those relations, and what you get is something like this. So you have mp square right by log of some constant a by omega naught minus 1. So this is for a particular potential, which is v equal to v proportional to phi. It's very linear here. This is the assumption. But you can choose other potentials also. You can put V as phi to the power n, and then there will be a factor of n here. But let's not worry about that detail. OK, so now this A is the same A which we fixed using the thermal history. It's essentially the same. Like, this is like this rho and et cetera, and the temperature, et cetera, which we computed. OK? So this, if this process happens at the electroweak scale, then this A will be around 10 to the power 25. And then one can see that this expression tells us that omega naught will lie between 0.1 and 0.9 if phi I is between 1.54 and 1.48. OK, so let me summarize. So we got this expression using the similar exercise which we have done before in the class. If this transition happened at the electroweak scale, and if phi I was 1.48 here, let us say, then you will get omega naught as 0.1, which is very different from 1. If your phi I is 1.54, then you will get 0.9. If it is higher, then you will approach more and more to 1. So suppose if you can fix how that, if you can suppose fix that the potential in a way that your phi initial here is 1.54 when it tunnels, then the end result of this calculation will be that omega naught will not be 1, but it will be 0.9, and it will have observable consequences. Okay? Is it very fast? I think so. Why don't you ask questions? Has anyone? Yeah.
So, what exactly is the difference between this and old inflation? Is it the slow thing or?
It is a mixture of old inflation and slow.
So, old inflation didn't have the slow.
No, old inflation was just side, right? Yeah. So, old inflation, if this was old inflation picture, the field is stuck here, and the field just tunnels here.
Right.
There is no slow after that. Okay? So, this is a mixture of old inflation and slow. So what old inflation does is to homogenize, produce a state such that this Coleman-DeLucia quantum tunneling cannot. Once this occurs, you get a universe which is open,
with omega equal to 0. Clock set to 0 again. And then the task is, can you fix a field such that you can get omega not less than 1?
Yeah. So then this does like more or less reset the universe with omega equal to 0 as well. Why can't we just start with omega equal to 0 after the tunneling and see the previous stuff and tunneling never actually happened?
Yeah, that's right.
It's more like a chaotic thing.
Yeah, okay, let me explain it slightly more. So the picture here is that in, so each of these bubbles is a separate universe, okay? And p equal to 0 in this bubble is actually the bubble wall, okay? That corresponds to the analog of our Big Bang. So the universe starts with omega equal to 0, as you are saying. If you look at the history of the universe in this framework, in the expanding branch, the universe starts with p equal to 0. Before that p equal to 0, there is another phase of inflation with which they are connected by quantum mechanics. Okay? So, and then, as you are saying, one takes this viewpoint, then one is completely right that from p equal to 0 to till onwards, one is just getting slower after that. Okay?
So, the only difference between this and slow roll is what happens before the Big Bang.
One of those differences is that. But the second difference, as I will show you now, is that there is no physical singularity. Okay? So let me just show it and then we will finish. Because that is a very beautiful point. And that's a very simple point actually. Okay. This is our last calculation. Yeah, sure.
For this model, k equals minus 1.
Inside the bubble.
We can't say send k to 0.
No.
Even.
No. You see, like, once we have chosen the topology, you cannot change the spatial curvature, right? You can only make it appear flat and flat. Okay? So, if k is minus 1, if in this case God gives us k equal to minus 1 after the tunneling, we have to live with k equal to minus 1. We can only make it appear like a flat universe if there was enough information.
What I mean is that to make this look like a universe, we have to fine tune into a case.
Absolutely. That is actually the weakness of this model. So, like, you have to fine tune. So, why this model became not so popular was because of the astronomers found that omega naught is very close to 1. Okay? So, the whole one of the motivations goes away. So, in order to do that, you require fine tuning. And wherever we have fine tuning, like, it kills the beauty of the model. But okay, let us discuss about like the last point. So I hope that you guys have seen this. It is very easy. That the metric for the open universe can be written in this form.
Was it covered in your first week? It actually comes from the fact that this metric is minus dt square. Plus a square, dr square by 1 plus r square, and then you define r equal to sin h chi. Okay, so let me start myself. So this is the metric for the open universe. Now define r equal to sin h chi. Okay, and then you can rewrite in this form. That's the idea. Okay, so now for this case, if you are approaching t equal to 0, that is where your singularity is, then A is actually going as t, because A dot is 1. So if you integrate, you get A going as t. So if I want to write the metric near the singularity, then this metric, I can replace A square by t square. Right? I'm just putting it there. And now I can introduce a coordinate transformation. So this is what is, if you will hear in your GR course, is called the Milne metric, or the Milne universe, the metric of the Milne universe. OK? Is it clear what we have done so far? Now let us redefine. Let us do a coordinate transformation on this metric. And let us define capital T, some new thing, which is t equal to cosh chi, and capital R, which is t sine h chi. And then we can take dt, and we can take dr, We can eliminate dt, small t, and we can eliminate d chi and sin h square chi from here. So for example, sin h square chi will be just t square sin h square chi is just r square, right? So you can plug this coordinate transformation here, and you will be very happily surprised that this quantity, this metric, is just Minkowski metric in the spherical coordinates. Okay, Minkowski metric is completely flat. The space-time curvature is zero, so there is no physical similarity. Okay, so that's the beauty of this model. One of the beauties that you get a bubble here, which corresponds to an open universe. Omega naught is zero, or omega is zero, and you have these initial conditions. If you look close to the singularity, the metric looks like a Milne metric. Okay, which you can just by coordinate transformations show that it is a flat universe. So this actually resolves, this is actually a substitute for one of the problems which we found in inflation. Because in the chaotic inflationary scenario, we discussed that there is a physical singularity which you worked out. Because if you have W less than minus 1 or W greater than minus 1, which happens in the inflationary scenario, then space-time curvature always diverges. This was your first exercise, right? So in the chaotic inflationary scenario, the singularity is real. The space-time curvature is diverging. In this scenario, there is no singularity because this universe is just flat near the singularity. And the flat universe has no space-time curvature. So nothing can diverge. OK, so I think let us stop here. And if you have any questions, then let us discuss. Or we can also discuss after the class.
This model is again very popular because of the string landscape scenarios. The idea of having an open inflation.
Is A fine-tuned or?
Oh, this is no, it? No. This is A. This is the A which we get from thermal history. You remember, like, we solve for this recombination or rho equality,
yes,
and things like that, and we have this temperature.
It's
given by the thermal history. It's a separate piece from the theory.
Okay. So the only thing that is fine tuned is
it's fine. Just fine.
Which could very well be 1.5 plus correction,
yeah,
of higher order.
Yes.
So we could hope that.
Yeah. But the you see, like, to be very frank, there is no complete model, as we have seen. We have studied paradigms, and we have studied their weaknesses and strengths. As you have seen, like, each of the paradigms has some beautiful part, has some weaknesses. Okay, so this also suffers from a similar fine-tuning, but not as big fine-tuning as a geometric inflation has. There you have to, because you see, like, if indeed the geometric inflation scenario is true, then d phi should be NT4, and then you are stuck with this trans-Blankian problem. Okay? But here, at least, there is no such problem. Here, these forces are very well understood. And then the beauty is that omega is set equal to zero after tunneling. And due to that, you can write in an open universe form. And because of the initial conditions, you can write in Milne form, and that is right as flat. If it was some other thing, you would not have been able to show that it's a coordinate singularity, not a physical singularity. So everything fits in some way to give us a good answer. Okay.